I've been working within the substance misuse field for over 10 years, primarily working with young people, but also with adults in the rehab sector as well. And during my time, I've noticed that there are a number of gaps in services, generally around the mental health side of things, really. Generally, when I work with an individual, we can quite easily get somebody to the stage of where they're becoming abstinent, so they come off the substance. But then the issue then being is there's such a big waiting gap from them receiving the right support in terms of the therapy, the counselling, to identify the issues that's kind of underlining for the reasons why that person is using in the first place. So generally what happens is during that period of time, if they're not supported by somebody, then they'll end up relapsing.
So your service, what is that going to do to try and stop that?
The idea is the service is going to bridge that gap. So within the service, we do a program. So the idea is a specialist substance misuse professional would work with an individual to get them off the substance, which is going to be cannabis in this case, to then be able to then refer them to the most appropriate counselling. Some of the research suggests that over 60% of those involved who are taking substances have some form of trauma. So the most appropriate therapy counselling for them in terms of the talking therapies would be something like an EMDR therapy or also a trauma-based CBT.
You said it's a lot of a trauma-based, so why do people start smoking cannabis in your experience that you've come across?
Primarily, a lot of people may do it for a wide number of reasons. Whether the young people or adults, generally the average age of a male to start using cannabis or a young person in essence is 14 years old, and at that stage they're kind of experimenting with a lot of things, whether it's drugs, sex, rock and roll and everything on that terms. So a lot of the young people that I work with have issues with stuff going on at family, the increase in domestic violence, so they're witnessing stuff that they shouldn't really be witnessing as young people, and prior to any sort of underlying mental health that might be there anyway. What I generally do is work with people to understand that a lot of the times, and I'd say there's a high percentage of those using substances have some sort of underlying issue. I believe that a lot of individuals aren't aware of their emotions and the emotions attached to that. And one of the emotions really is, you know, anxiety and depression. So they kind of confuse their emotions. Some of the stuff that I generally work when I work with young people is to actually educate them on the actual facts. One of the biggest myths out there is with cannabis users is they believe that when they have a joint, they will go to sleep, which is actually the opposite. What happens is there's a process that should happen when we go to sleep, which is called REM, which stands for rapid eye movement, which basically puts us into a deep sleep, which allows the chemicals and our muscles and all our body to repair. What happens when you're under the influence of something, that process doesn't happen. So if someone smokes cannabis from the age of 14 to 18, for example, they won't sleep or gain that REM within that period of time. So therefore, it obviously has a massive impact on their mental health. As such, so in terms of the motivation, the concentration, you know, the low self-esteem, anxiety, depression, and all the other things that might sneak in there as well.
Can it have a long-lasting effect?
It can. It's very difficult because drugs affect people in different ways. So there's no one case that's ever the same. There's a lot of links with people developing, you know, drug-induced psychosis. Which can come, but generally what happens within the mental health world as an individual, it's hereditary. So if somebody within the family has somebody who suffers, you know, it might be an uncle or granddad that has a mental health issue, whether it's depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, psychosis, if somebody then smokes a joint or uses another substance, it can spark off that mental health illness. For other people, they can obviously develop other issues as along with that.
It takes a really long time for somebody to get cannabis actually out of their system.
I've been very privileged to gain the right training and the right information from some very good experts in the substance misuse world. And in terms of just getting it out your system, in terms of being tested by when you're tested by urine, it's roughly about 28 days. But when people can test within a hair sample, they can tell what you've used for up to a 6-month period, which is very interesting, really, in the science side of things. But in terms of being able to get your brain to redevelop, so all the chemicals like the dopamine and serotonin to reproduce, and to get to possibly a normal state of mind, whatever that should be, it could be a 6-month period. So if the clients that I speak to and I talk to them about how many people that they know who've not used cannabis for 6 months, they don't know anybody.
Gosh. How dangerous can cannabis be?
As far as I'm aware, I don't think there's been any deaths with regards to cannabis. But when we talk to young people or educating people, and you've got to think about all the smoking related illnesses that are associated with smoking cannabis. So if you talk about the dangers of cannabis as a drug by itself, I think the mental health side of things outweigh the actual dangers about somebody dying. It depends on what it's mixed with. The difficulty is that the potency of cannabis at the moment is absolutely through the roof. So there's a lot of homemade factories within England where people obviously grow the cannabis, but they obviously spray it with a lot of fertilizer, a lot of chemicals and stuff. So when somebody's trying to get a certain high as such, it's a lot stronger and a lot more potent than what they would normally. I remember back years ago when they used to, the main form of cannabis was resin, which is just a small brown block, which was a lot low level in quality. And then people would buy skunk as a way of a little bit of a reward. It would be more expensive, but you would get more of a high from it. There, obviously, the market's changed a lot, and now most people would buy the term is a gram of cannabis, which would be a £10 bag. So as I say, I think what I'm noticing is there's a lot of young people out there smoking what I call a very potent form of cannabis, and it's knocking the heads off.
Gosh. I've been on some of these raids and actually seen for myself all these cannabis plants. So there's really little baby ones, but the one place I went to, they were really, really tall. Are those the potent ones you're talking about?
No, it depends on it's not an area that I'm 100% clear on, really, in terms of the science of it and how they grow it. I know it's a 3-month process. It's quite quick in terms of what generally may happen is a criminal gang might take over a place on a 6-month lease, and the aim to get in there and out there with as many plants as they possibly can grow within a 3-month period to go. And I know people who work for letting agents, and they end up going into these properties and all the electrics have been kind of tampered with and all that sort of thing. So
about the services, kind of back to that, because what you're doing, you said there's a gap. Do you think more needs to be done? Is that partly why you've set out yourself, because not enough's been done to help people?
I think there's some fantastic services out there, and I want to make this perfectly clear. I'm going down a different angle of offering a private service, and I think there's a lot of positives with being private. I think a lot of the free services out there. So one of the biggest aims I want to do is try and use some of the finances that's raised to actually promote to people that there is actually support out there, whether it's they've got low level depression, low level anxiety, they want to reduce the amount they're using, they want to stop the amount they're using. So one of the things I'm going to be doing is linking in with the free services as such to be able to make sure that they get the help that they do. All I'm trying to do is offer an option, really, is to be as flexible as possible. So if somebody's at work, for example, and they're struggling, you know, they might be smoking a little bit too much cannabis for their own liking, and they may be struggling to function properly at work and get the best out of them, to actually come in an evening, really, or I will go and meet them in a location that we kind of choose between ourselves, and be very flexible about the approach, to then undergo assessment, to identify what the underlying issues are, to work with them to come off the substance, to then follow on into the therapy, which I would deem would be the most suitable for them.
What are the type of stories that you've heard over the years from people who've been addicted to cannabis?
It goes from anything from a young person may have lost a family member, so a bereavement, to they may have witnessed something, like I said before, in terms of domestic violence. They might have seen mum beat up dad, dad beat up mum. There may be some disclosure of some sort of sexual abuse. In my opinion, there's always a reason. And it's trying to get people to identify the links of why people use substances. And a lot of guys, you know, I can speak on part of a guy, we're rubbish with our emotions. So whenever we get upset about something, we're told as children to, you know, man up, only girls cry. So we change that emotion of being upset into anger. So we'd rather than cry, we'd hit someone or something rather than deal with it. For me, I think there should be a lot more emphasis on educating parents on how to speak to their children about substances. So being confident in that approach, really, in not just substances but also in sex education and all the other stuff that we kind of as parents get a bit worried about the approach, how we bring something up and talk about it without being them, because I don't think I would have spoke to my mum and dad about these sorts of the topics. So one of the biggest things, whether it's on a one-to-one basis or whether it's within a group setting, to kind of meet the parents, just to work with them if their child or family member doesn't want the support themselves. And I think also there's a lot of stresses in this day and age, and I think it's good for everyone to get the appropriate support if they need to do so in the right place.
I believe you're teaming up to try and get some workshops to go into schools and do this.
Yeah, I've partnered up with a new organisation called, I think they're called Elephant in the Room, which is a training provider. So the idea is we're going to work very closely together to get out there to offer these sorts of trainings, whether it's to professionals, to young people themselves in schools, colleges, homeless shelters, it doesn't matter where it's going to be, and also to put on these workshops for parents. So there might be an angle where a provider might pay for the service for a group of parents to come, or whether they're going to pay individually to come and be educated and to actually find out what support's available in their area. I think there's a massive gap, as I keep saying, in terms of the parent side of things, really, and being supported.
Do you think the problem's getting worse? Do you think more people are taking up cannabis?
I don't think it's getting worse. I think it's always been there. I think, personally, there's always been an underlying issue. I just think there's a lot of conflicting information, or, you know, as a professional, it's hard to understand, never mind whether it's a young person or adult trying to understand the relaxation around the law. You know, in terms of the classes, it's, you know, class A, class B, class C. What are the laws? And if someone is then caught with cannabis, what is the punishment for that? And I think things have become a lot more relaxed because I think the police aren't able to actually deal with the amount of users that they're probably coming into contact with.
But is it a big problem?
I personally think so, yes. I think it's what, you know, statistics suggest it's one of the most widely used illegal drugs. There's always an argument, you know, what's more dangerous, you know, alcohol or cannabis, or, you know, when you talk about gateway drugs, in my opinion, one of the biggest times that, you know, in terms of a substance that someone would take a risk and harm themselves is to smoke a cigarette. And then from that, they then may end up, you know, getting to their 16th, 18th, 21st birthday, and then it's alcohol. But a lot of people at that stage when they're using cigarettes may then at the age of 14, when they're kind of experimenting a little bit, might then be more likely, because they've already taken one risk, to then take another one by smoking cannabis. And if you at that point get a young person at 14 years old who has something that's going on at home, some negative emotions, they might be quite low in confidence, there might be the pressures of school or the pressures of home life, and they're given that drug, it gives them the sense of relief for the moment that they're on it, that they don't have to think about all the negative things.
Mm. Is 14 the average age, or have you come across anyone younger?
I do. The age, in my opinion, is going a little bit lower to probably around, it's anything between the age of 12 and 14, really. Predominantly for the first 8 years of my career, it was always averaging on around 15. At 14, sorry. But there are certainly younger people. I've come across people who start at the age of 8.
And how do you deal with a child as young as 8 to try and get them off cannabis?
Well, I think the first protocol is to do a very good substance misuse assessment to identify what's actually going on for that child. You think about the home life, are there any boundaries in place, you know, what the parents like, are they witnessing substance misuse within their own home from their own parents? I know one previous client that I've worked with in the past, when I've questioned to where he got his drugs from, he said his grandma bought him them. So if you imagine from an outsider, you know, who am I to that child? You know, why would they listen to what I say when their own family are telling them that cannabis is okay to smoke? And there's been other people in the past who it's been known within the family that whenever they're pregnant, they've continued to smoke cannabis during pregnancy because they haven't seen any negative effect within their family themselves.
And of course, that can be really dangerous if you're smoking cannabis.
Absolutely, absolutely. I always think, in terms of a child protection side of things, that if you can't meet the needs of your child when you're pregnant, how are you going to meet the needs of your child when they're born?
You mentioned earlier about gateway drugs. Do you find that cannabis is a gateway to harder drugs, if you like?
It depends on an individual preference, really. I've worked with people who hate cannabis, they've tried it and they really don't like it, and they're more likely to, if they are going to take a risk, go on to more of a stimulant type drugs like cocaine, ecstasy. It's a hard one to answer, but if I can start and think about as a gateway, I would always blame cigarettes for the gateway, because it's that moment that you take a risk in your life. Mm. And most of the cannabis users that I work with would always have smoked cigarettes before they would have tried cannabis.
As a station, we do an awful lot on domestic violence because it's such a massive problem. So what links do you believe there are to cannabis?
Probably to all drugs, but cannabis for me is one of the most dangerous drugs out there. And I don't mean dangerous in terms of deaths. I'm talking about people's way of life, and the people in terms of, as a child, if you use it as a child, the development stages that you should go through doesn't happen. So for example, if you smoke cannabis from the age of 14 to the age of 24, not only do you not have that REM sleep for that period of time, so primarily you're suffering with sleep deprivation and you have a very poor state of mind. Also, what happens in the early stage of your life, from 14, 15, 16, 17, up to 18, and throughout, is really your brain develops. And when it develops, you're supposed to learn stuff, learn about your emotions, learn how to love someone, learn how to hate someone. The basic things, really. And if you smoke cannabis or take drugs through that process, the process doesn't happen. So primarily, if someone's been smoking it for 10 years up to the age of 24, at the age of 24, emotionally, they're still 14 years old. So if you've got a 24-year-old individual who's been smoking cannabis with an emotional age of 14, in an adult relationship with another 24-year-old female, for example, who has never used substances, there's very childlike behaviour. Checking phones, you know, always jealous, asking questions where they've been, which then links into that behaviour. Obviously, alcohol is always blamed a lot of the time for domestic violence incidents. If you've got a 14-year-old emotionally individual who's actually 24, it's just a recipe for disaster. And I think a lot of services should do a lot more education, really, on the links, not just with alcohol but with other drugs, and the development stages of an individual from cannabis, because I do believe there's a link somewhere.
You mentioned as well off air before about, you know, people take it for health benefits, cures for cancer, that sort of type of thing. It's a bit of a grey area, isn't it?
It is, and it's not something I know a great deal about, but I believe that they should really be honest about the findings. It's all hearsay, word of mouth. I'm not aware of any doctor that's come out and said it's true. But in terms of the education, when we're educating someone, it's really hard when a young person says to me, you know, cannabis cures cancer. And I always try and go down the route, really, is, I don't know if I can mention it, but as if you buy a Domino's pizza and it's got vegetables on it, does that make it healthy? Mm. Therefore, they obviously see it as the cannabis being the cure of cannabis, but when they smoke a joint, for example, they've obviously got a cigarette within the joint that's got up to 60 cancer-causing chemicals within the cigarette. So it's a catch-22. I know there is some research allegedly going on with cannabis oil, which is a very strong form of cannabis, to state that there has been cases where, you know, cancers have been treated and people have not, you know, but for me, to as a professional, I can't say if that's true or false. Mm. I know in terms of medical research that there are some benefits from some people that I know personally that suffer from arthritis or multiple sclerosis, who have used substances such as, well, mainly cannabis, and it helps them to then function properly. And I think what's needed, really, is for some a lot more intelligent individuals than me to sit around the table and look at the whole cannabis picture, really, and see if there's another option. And one of the biggest things is to educate young people and adults and parents and families on the actual truth that's out there.
We've talked at length about mental health services and then bridging that gap from when they're first diagnosed, getting treatment to the mental health services. So what needs to be done, in your view?
I think it'd be really nice to work very closely with the mental health services. I'm very passionate about supporting people with all issues and trying to get people to their end goal, whatever that may be. There's a lot of poorly people out there who are using substances such as cannabis. And if there's some way where I can obviously relieve that pressure from the mental health services by taking on the low-level anxiety or depression clients, that will just kind of take that, as I keep saying, the pressure from them, I think there's definitely a gap to be able to fill there. From what I'm aware of, that mental health services has high caseloads. You know, the workers are inundated with quite a lot of crisis cases. I wonder if there's quite a lot of the low-level clients being overlooked.
Do you think there are people suffering in silence that are maybe overlooked, invisible, because of, not through anybody's fault, but just because of the burden on services?
I think yes, definitely. I just think there's not a lot of money pumped into to enable people to know what services are out there. People are quite reluctant to come forward. They're not sure what's entailed in it. You know, people are quite nervous about talking about this stuff, and it's this very scary process to actually deal with such negative things that you've been holding on for such a long time for, really. And I just want to really emphasize that there's so many good services out there, you know, not just the service that I'm setting up, but that have some very skilled workers. And what I believe in is, when you do get a worker, that it's about a relationship with that worker. There's no point sitting in front of somebody who looks, you know, they might not have the same interest as you, or you might not really respect that person. And a lot of people go to their counselling sessions and say to me, you know, I didn't like my counsellor. And it's okay to ask for another counsellor. There's no harm. The counsellors are adults, you know. They understand that their job is to get the person to wherever they want to go in terms of their own mental well-being. They need to be just to keep trying and to try and get that right support that's for them.
Where can people find you? Where can people get in touch?
So the website address is www.stopsmokingcannabis.co.uk. If you want to find us on Facebook at Know the Truth UK.